I'm Brittany Luce, and welcome to Sampler, the show where we play you handpicked moments from podcasts that you just have to hear. So today on the show, I am going to attempt to do something that, at least to me, felt impossible. My best friend, someone who lives with me, actually doesn't like podcasts and won't listen to mine. So this week, I bring her into the studio to try to convince her that podcasts are totally worth her time. And in the second half of the show, I speak to the producer of a podcast who bared her soul on mic in a way that stopped me in my tracks. I had some follow-up questions, so I decided to bring her in. And just a heads up, some of the themes in this episode will be adult in nature. So, you know, use some discretion when deciding who can hear this. So, dear listeners, by downloading this episode, you are already more supportive of my podcasting career than my own roommate and best friend, Iman. Out of the hours and hours of podcasting I've made, she's heard probably a combined total of like 8 minutes. I mean, how shameful. Me, a host of multiple podcasts, shacking up with an avid avoider of podcasts. No. Something has to be done. I am determined to convert Iman to the church of podcastology. So, one night at home, I sat Iman down, poured us some wine, and tried to figure out the root of her podcast apathy and how I could bring her over to my side.
So, how would you describe our relationship?
Oh, that. You know, you are like one of my best friends. I mean, some days, like, you are my best friend, and other days you aren't.
Thank you.
I mean that in the best possible
That's
way.
That's the kindest thing you've ever said to me. Okay. Do you listen to a lot of podcasts?
No.
So, are you aware that I host podcasts?
Yeah. No, I tell everybody all the time. I'm like, my best friend, she is like the Oprah of podcasting, and I'm dead ass. Oh, can I cuss?
You can curse, yeah.
Okay.
So you've admitted that you don't listen to either one of my podcasts, really?
I mean, like, you live with me, and you know that I don't, but not everybody else needs to know that, and they don't actually even question it. They're just like, okay.
That's good. No, I appreciate you. You are probably my most uninformed hype man, so I appreciate that.
Always.
So if you could tell me what you know about Sampler.
It's a podcast about podcast.
That's very good. I'm actually really impressed.
No, I have my spiel down. I was like, you know, startup, Alex Bloomberg.
You met him.
We did.
Yeah.
Alex.
Yes.
Was Nazanin's husband.
Yes.
Okay.
So the next question, I think you'll be happy to answer. What are you interested in?
Capitalism, food.
Okay.
Things in popular urban culture.
Okay.
Let's see. Mental health topics.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Conspiracy theories.
Oh, conspiracy theories. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Korean beauty hacks.
So, what do you do for fun?
Just scheming, writing lists.
Scheming on who are you plotting on? Somebody?
Everybody. To one, like, world domination. Taking care of myself, self care.
So, what element would a podcast have to have in order to make you a regular listener?
I would like to be exposed to, like, a new idea, point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it could be funny, but, you know, I think that I'm the most funniest person, so that's going to be hard to make me laugh. Like, I kind of want to be, like, changed a little bit.
Okay, so describe to me your perfect podcast.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so it'd be, like, Maya Angelou.
Mm-hmm.
Toni Morrison, Neil deGrasse Tyson,
uh-huh.
and Spock in space.
Wait, Spock or Leonard Nimoy?
Spock, the character.
Okay. Maya Angelou back from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Toni Morrison, still alive. Neil deGrasse Tyson, also alive.
Yeah.
Spock.
Not a real person, a character.
Fictional character.
Yeah.
From the future.
Yes.
Okay.
Outer space, telling me things, just like giving me wisdom.
That's your ideal podcast?
Yeah. But maybe you can, you know, pare it down.
Oof. Iman was going to be more of a challenge than I even expected. So I assembled Team Sampler, and we scrambled to find something that could satisfy my world domination loving, podcast hating friend. Nervous, I brought Iman over to the Gimlet Studios to see if I could finally bring her into the podcast light. So before we get started, just like if you had to guess, how confident are you that we were able to follow through on this mission?
I mean, like, you know me pretty well. And yeah, like, I actually trust you.
All right, so our first clip comes from a podcast called Flash Forward. It's hosted by Rose Eveleth, and it explores the future, asking questions like, how close are we to discovering time travel or getting rid of all mosquitoes, which I think is an excellent idea. Mm. But Rose takes a specific future scenario, and she explores what it would look like. So you being a forward-thinking woman, I figured, you know, this was right up your alley. So in this particular episode, Rose and her guest, sociologist Shelley Ronan, ask what our future would look like with a special type of artificial intelligence. But first, you'll hear a fictional ad for sex robots.
Sex robots.
Do you ever find that your desires are unconventional? You want more than your partners can give. Something stronger. Something bigger. Something more intense. It can be hard to ask, but it's easy to program. Let the Leopold step in and make your desires a reality.
Making a sex robot is really hard. Right now, the products out there are really just sex dolls that might have a couple of pre-programmed phrases in them or a little bit of eye tracking. There are some devices that you can connect to the internet to feel like you're having sex with someone who's in another room or another continent, but those aren't humanoid forms. Sex robots, full-on walking, talking, sex-having robots, those are a huge technical challenge. But there are some deeper, harder ethical questions to grapple with, too, which don't just apply to sex robots. They apply to robots more generally. How do we feel about owning and using a thing that looks and acts like a human?
It's unlikely, I think, by the time we get to the sex robot commodity, if we ever get there, it's unlikely that they will be just for sex. It's more likely that they will actually be a multi-purpose device, you know, that they'll take care of your children, that they'll, like, take care of your elderly, that they'll cook your dinner, that they'll, you know, drive you around, whether you'll have a self-driving car, so who knows, maybe you'll be having sex with your car, but, like, you know, you'll... It's more likely that this will be a full-service device.
So what are your initial thoughts?
I mean, I thought this was pretty cool, you know? It had, like, enough of, like, a shock value for me to, like, pay attention.
Shock value?
I was like, oh, sex! But then, you know, then I started to, like, go down this, you know, rabbit hole of, like, artificial intelligence and, you know, will all the robots kill us in the end?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is artificial intelligence like the next step in like the
obliteration of the human race?
Yeah, you know, and so that, you know, brings back one of my interests, world domination.
How does world domination connect with sex robots for you?
Look, it makes me kind of, you know, think about the question, if there's something that like we like create that's like a robot and they start to have, you know, their own thoughts, their own feelings, are they going to try and like overthrow us?
So when you say world domination, I always assumed you meant you dominating the world. You mean like
the end of days.
The end of days.
Yeah.
you think that bringing about sex robots could call the end of days?
Yeah, like they pretty much like brought up in like the clip. I mean, there's so much more that like a sex robot is going to have to possibly do.
How do you feel about the clip? You feel like a thumbs up?
I think it's cute. It's cute. You know, I can see myself, you know, cleaning my house, folding some clothes to it. Yeah.
I feel good. I feel like we're moving in a positive direction, and we're going to move on to the second clip. So something else that you also expressed interest in when we spoke to you. You love outer space.
I do.
You also mentioned that you love Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Who doesn't love Neil deGrasse Tyson?
I can't think of a person.
Yeah.
So you described your perfect podcast as him, Spock, Toni Morrison, and Maya Angelou in space,
mm-hmm.
talking about things that would give you life lessons.
Yeah.
We could not do that. But Neil deGrasse Tyson does have a podcast. It's called Star Talk Radio. He talks to scientists and sometimes comedians and other smart people about space or science in space, sometimes about comedy, all sorts of things. So in the clip we're about to play for you now, Neil is interviewing George Takei.
Oh, my God.
We couldn't get you Spock. I'm so sorry. But he's interviewing George Takei, who is from the original cast of Star Trek, the television show, interviewing him about the legacy of Star Trek. But then they get into something else that I personally found really interesting, and I think that you might like.
Hit me with your best shot. That was so corny. I just wanted to say that.
So this episode, in part, tackles the idea of traveling through space and time. And in this clip, George Takei is asking Neil deGrasse Tyson about the plausibility of one of the most common tropes in science fiction.
Wormholes. You know, we're not going anywhere without them.
Well, we haven't been there yet.
Forget that we don't know how to make one yet. I mean, we know on paper we can do it, but not physics.
And on movies, too.
And in movies.
Interstellar.
We're really good in movies.
Matthew McConaughey.
Exactly.
And it was a stunning...
So forget that we don't know how to make one. Or we don't have the command over space, time, matter, and energy yet to make one.
Do you think we will eventually?
I don't see why not.
As the communicator became so many other things?
Yeah, I don't see why not. Because what you want to do is be able to control the fabric of space and time with matter and energy curve the fabric of space and time. Einstein tells us, and we can experimentally verify that that happens. So right now, how much energy do we command? Not that much. How much mass can we manipulate? Not that much. We're not there yet. But the day we can summon the energy of a galaxy, the mass of all the stars in the supercluster, we can then tune it to bend space this way, that way, pry open, and use it almost as space-time sculptors.
How many lifetimes, though, before we get to that point?
You know, I don't know if it's farther away than someone in 1900 saying, oh, we'll never get to the moon. And then 69 years later, we're leaving boot prints. It's hard for me to assess how far away it is.
You know, I just think that we just give ourselves too much credit.
In what way?
Going to the moon, I think, was possibly easy.
Why do you think that was easy? Because it's so close?
Yeah. I just think as human beings, we just have this like level of self-importance that... You can do anything and everything is for us, and it's not.
So how does that relate to wormholes for you?
I just think that we just don't need to do it. I think we need to, you know, downsize.
Downsize?
Yeah.
Like, in some way, stunt our space ambitions?
Well, like, I feel like there's so many problems at home, but then, you know, somebody could also, you know, just have, like, a case for, like, well, that's why we need to explore the stars, because we've ruined this planet.
That actually is something that is explored in the next clip that we're getting to.
What?
Yes.
There's more?
There's more. Oh, yeah, there's definitely more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hit me with your best shot.
You said that the last time.
But I think it sounded better this time.
The next clip comes from a podcast called On Being. It's hosted by this woman, Krista Tippett. I guess the simplest way to describe it is conversations with guests about spirituality. On Being is asking these big open-ended questions to people who have spent decades just like thinking about, like, you know, what is love. So in this particular clip, Krista Tippett is interviewing Nikki Giovanni,
Okay.
Who is a poet and professor, yes, as you know, at Virginia Tech.
I've thought about getting a Thug Life tattoo. Like,
yes.
So many times.
Because of Nikki Giovanni?
Yes.
So for those of you who don't know, Thug Life is actually a phrase that was popularized by the 90s rapper, the late Tupac Shakur. And he says, the hate you give little infants fucks everybody. Basically meaning the way that society bears down on hating small, young, black and brown children, like, creates people who feel really unloved. You know, you unleash a bunch of unloved people on society and it's just not good. So Nikki Giovanni was a huge fan of that particular phrase. She found it really poetic. And she was always a champion for Tupac. So much so that she got a Thug Life tattoo herself.
Yeah.
Anyway, what you're about to hear is Nikki Giovanni talking to Krista Tippett, kind of about the idea that you left the last clip thinking about, which is, why do we need to continue to explore space? Why do we need to leave this planet and go someplace else? Nikki makes the argument that we should, and actually, as Black people, we are uniquely qualified to go to space.
It goes back to Middle Passage, because if you can survive that journey from west coast of Africa to the east coast of the United States and be sane when you get here. And that's what we haven't looked at. And so, again, a part of my research that I'm trying to do now, and hopefully I'll live long enough to get more done than I've been doing, though I'm working on it. A part of my research is that we have not dealt with the fact that they were sane when they got here. I just wrote a poem, and I said, one of the lines in the poem said, Pluto will one day be another, will be a planet, and we're going to send Black kids up there to learn how to ski. And I love it.
Would you say a little bit more about how you're thinking about slavery now in ways that you didn't think about it before?
When you say, as I look into slavery, well, we know that there were victims in slavery. I don't have any problem with that. But we also know that something good came out of slavery because we in Black America became Americans. Because we, you know, no matter what Marcus Garvey or any of the rest say, there is no back to.
Yeah.
This is it for us because we have no place to go back. I'm what, a fifth-generation American, something like that, if I'd have to do the math. But there's no place to go back. So it's not unusual for somebody like me to be in love with something like Mars, because all my people have ever done is go forward. And then we go forward with a sanity and a love. Mm. And I think that that's so important, that planet Earth tap in to that. Quit playing these little stupid race games and find out what it is that these people are bringing to all of us as we go forward.
Out of all the ones that you've played me, I'm like, oh my God, after this is over, I need to find this. I mean, she just sounds like me in like 20 years.
What did you like about it so much?
You know, like, I felt like it wasn't gimmicky. It was just like, you know, conversations with, you know, people that I really, really respect, and just like an honest, like, conversation.
What did you think about what Nikki said about Black people's desire to to go to space or to be on Mars? Or to, like, even, like, it makes me think of, like, the concept of, like, Afrofuturism, sort of, like, imagining the future, like, imagining, like, a vibrant future for people of African descent. Specifically, speaking, like, about myself or about us, like, specifically for Black people from the United States.
I don't know. Like, listening to that clip, you know, it made me think of, like, a lot of thoughts, not so much about outer space, but just, like, what it means to be American.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, slavery. And how that, if nothing else, we are American, and we're as American as it gets. And, you know, like, me and, like, my life, like, you know, I remember, like, one day I was in, like, Howard University in Afrocentric class, and everybody was like, well, I'm this, and this makes me unique. And I was like, well, I'm American. And everybody was like, whoa, 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 whoa. And I, as much as I try and fake it, I'm as American as it gets. When you played that clip, it made me kind of think more about, you know, like, who I am and identity-wise. And, you know, I don't think the answers are in outer space. Answers are right here. I think that we just need to, you know, fix what's around us, or just, you know.
What, allow the sex robots to take over and kill us all?
Yeah.
Actually, I think that's a really beautiful reflection. And I guess I also listened to, like, the longer episode. And it's really good. I would suggest that anybody listen to it.
Yeah, no, like, I'm going to download this, like, beep, boop, beep, beep podcast.
precisely. For all those of you who have been confused how you've been listening to this show every week, it's Beep Boop Beep Beep Podcast. That's exactly how the, if you just say that into the iPhone microphone, the whole thing just opens up. How do you feel about like the wide breadth of clips that we played for you today?
I mean, I feel like, you know, I have a really, really good friend, Brittany, and then she knows me pretty well. And she definitely delivered. And I think that this is really, really sweet what you did.
I am relieved. I'm not going to lie. I was a little nervous that just in general, you have such discerning tastes that we wouldn't be able to like at least keep your attention.
Yeah.
But I feel like we did.
Yeah. No, you definitely did.
Well, you're welcome back anytime. And happy listening, Iman.
Oh, thank you.
So we obviously couldn't get to all of Iman's wish list. So if anyone out there knows a good podcast about Korean beauty hacks or some great moments on capitalism or conspiracy theories, let us know. Send us a voice memo at sampler@gimletmedia.com. So we're going to take a quick break. But first, to recap what you've heard so far, my playlist for Iman featured clips from Flash Forward, Star Talk Radio, and On Being. Up next, we are going to get into the story behind the story of one podcast producer's on-air confession.
And then I started working on this show, and it totally crushed my romantic vision of parenthood. And so I then sort of backed off of the idea that I would ever want to be a parent.
Welcome back to Sampler. I want to tell you a story about a podcast called The Longest, Shortest Time. This is a show all about parenting, hosted by Hillary Frank. It's a show about parenting, but it's not just for parents. I listen because it helps me understand all the different ways that people make their families. When I think about how you start a family as somebody without children, it's like there's so much to me that seems very mysterious about it. And I think that Longest, Shortest Time just does a really great job of taking you behind, you know, just different sets of people's decision making. And also the show is just really real. You know, like you hear these moments of just like pure joy from parents.
I grabbed her nose, you know, you do with kids. I got your nose. And then I told her, I'm going to keep your nose. I'm going to put it on my face and you can have my nose. And she was like, no, you can't do that. And I said, why not? And she said, because then if I have your nose, then I have to be big like you.
And The Longest, Shortest Time isn't afraid to go there with the scary stuff either.
He was hooked up to like five different things.
And they put him under the warmer, so he went from being
our cute little swaddled baby with his little hat on, like blinking his eyes at me, to like he had an IV and he had stuff taped to his face and he had a heart monitor, and I could just only sit there and like cry and hold his little hand.
But I want to talk to you about one episode specifically. It was an episode I really identified with. It was a story of a woman who actually didn't have any kids at all.
When I started at this job, I was like, oh yeah, I want to have kids. I think I would be a good mom someday. But it was like very, very romanticized.
That's Joanna Solotaroff, and she was a producer on Longest, Shortest Time. So for this particular episode called Should I Have Kids? Joanna asked her boss, Hillary, if they could go into the studio. Joanna wanted to share the conversation she had been having with herself about whether or not to have kids, something that was frankly influenced by the show.
And then I started working on this show, and it totally crushed my romantic vision of parenthood. And so I then sort of backed off of the idea that I would ever want to be a parent. It kind of scared me.
This is breaking my heart.
Okay.
I ruined it for you.
Ruined it for me. Closed for business.
But that's not even the reason why she wanted to go into the studio with Hillary. She actually had this whole other realization after that. It brought her to a completely different point in this debate over whether or not to become a mom.
About a month ago, I ran into an acquaintance on the subway, and we were talking. And she said she was enrolled in this program, and it was sort of this life visioning thing. And for me, I'm not really.
Wait, so is this like a support group or something?
It's like a cohort. So you're with a group of people, and there's somebody who guides you through sort of this curriculum of identifying what your goals are in the very short term. So like what you're going to do next week, next month, next year. And she was explaining the program to me, and we were sort of unpacking it on the train. And then she said, and then I made a 10-year plan, and then I made a 20-year plan. And on the train, I thought to myself, whoa, I've never considered what my life is going to be like in 20 years. I've never even given it a thought. And then the first thing that I thought of is having a relationship with a daughter.
Wow.
And I was on the train and was like, what? What? Like, I didn't even know this was a desire of mine to
Your
have.
Your face is like turning red, right?
I know. It freaked me out.
So now Joanna wants to have kids. She told Hillary about being close to her own mother and wanting to have a similar relationship with a daughter someday. Later in the episode, she even called her mom to discuss her newly realized desire with her. It was really sweet. After hearing the episode, I had a million questions for Joanna. Like, what made her decide to put herself out there in such a personal way? You know, has she changed her mind since then? And the show came out a year ago. Could she, maybe, be in the family way? So I invited Joanna down to the Sampler studio to follow up on the aftermath of her big reveal and to ask her some highly personal questions.
A friend of mine was like, cool, you went on a podcast and talked about your plans to have kids with both your boss and your mom at the same time. Interesting choice. Not what I would have chosen to do.
Yeah. How did you decide that, like why record that and share that realization with so many people?
You know, The Longest Shortest Time, that show is all about sort of like intimacy. And it felt like it has a very like supportive community around it. Mm-hmm. And I think it felt like a safe venue for me to talk about it. I think there's a lot of women who feel the same way I do, who are in a similar place as me, where you think of yourself as somebody who would maybe like to have a family someday, but like the things in play, like the way your life is arranged isn't necessarily pointing to that. And then, you know, you've got like, the term biological clock is like the grossest thing ever.
I hate that term also myself. Say more about that.
Like, it's very present, and my friends are having conversations about how they want to like freeze their eggs, or like, you know, the challenges that come with dating, the challenges with being single, the challenges mm-hmm. that come with maybe not being settled down when mm-hmm. you're in your 30s. And also, we were hearing from a lot of people who are listeners who are like, I don't have kids, but that doesn't mean they don't have a relationship to parenthood or the idea of being a parent.
And this is going to make me sound like that's so Raven. But when I was, when I was 25, I had this like vision where I was a mom. I had two children. I was like getting them up in the morning and taking them to school. And like, I realized that my current lifestyle at 25 was not really like supporting what it was that I wanted. Now, granted, you know, at 25, like, what are you doing anyway? I don't know. Like, I knew I wanted to be a mom. I knew I wanted to get married, but I was like, I just thought I had forever.
It feels so abstract.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hope it doesn't sound arrogant to say, but I like really love that interview, and I've gone back and listened to it a lot because, I don't know, I think that people don't always have the freedom to talk about what their desires are. And for me to be able to talk about my mom about, like, what maybe that might look like mm-hmm. and to share that with her for the first time was just very, very cool. And just also hearing the story she told me about getting pregnant with me, I, like, hadn't heard the whole thing. And I was like, that's insane.
Truth to tell, I did have unprotected sex over my span and did not get pregnant. So I was pretty casual about birth control, and then it was oops. And I totally knew that if we didn't get married and raise this child together, that I was going to do it by myself. I just knew it. You were a very assertive fetus.
What does that mean?
I mean that, you know, there was just no question that I'd have an abortion, and there was no question that you were not going to happen. That's what's known as the assertive fetus. In my world, you know, I mean, it was just like, it was just a given. I did not question it.
How did Dad react when you told him you were pregnant?
Oh, he just about died. It was not good news to him, shall we say.
Can you describe what his face looked like?
Oh, well, you've seen his face. You've seen the horror face. The crumple face.
I know
that
face.
The mask of tragedy.
So well. Oh, my God.
Steam coming out of the nose.
I just assumed that you guys had had this kind of conversation before.
I knew that I was a surprise, but I really didn't know that, like, my mom basically thought that she was going to raise me as a single mom halfway into her pregnancy. Like, I didn't know that. My dad did propose halfway through the pregnancy, mm-hmm. but that's so scary. Like, I put myself in those shoes and I'm like, that mm-hmm. must have been so intense.
Do you think that you couldn't have talked to your mother so openly about this if it weren't for the premise of the show?
Normally I call my mom when I'm like really distracted and like doing the dishes, and then we just talk about reality TV with each other. And so this created this great venue to just sort of pull back and tell each other our stories. And especially because I live far away from her, those are the kinds of conversations we normally have face to face. And so like to create the time and space and intention to actually like really talk it through was amazing. That's an experience that I feel like I'm never going to take for granted.
So you said that prior to working on the show, you always assumed that you wanted kids, like some, you know, something nebulous and in the future. One of the things that you say in the Should I Have Kids episode is that you heard some things that were really scary and some things that made you be like, oh, no, not for me. Like, what specific stories did you work on that made you afraid to have children?
I feel not necessarily afraid to have children, but like afraid of it made me very afraid of like childbirth and afraid of the medical procedures. I mean, part of my job was like calling people up and asking about their childbirth injuries. Like, people have kids all the time, and learning about the shit that people would go through mm-hmm. was like, I was like, this is not acceptable. Like, one woman, it was the episode called Pediatricians, They're Just Like Us.
Yes.
She was a pediatrician and she was like literally giving birth. She was like, there's something that's not right. There's something that's not right.
I kind of saw him reach for something. I couldn't see everything, obviously. And my husband said he saw him reach basically to get scissors to cut an episiotomy. And the fact that he didn't say anything, I don't know. It did surprise me a little bit. But I knew right afterwards that something was more significant, because as I'm, you know, holding the baby, I look down, you know, and right between my legs, basically, at the obstetrician's head. And he's kind of bent over, really looking concentrated and serious. And he's sweating. And I'm like, what's he doing down there? He just looked up at me finally and he said, you had a little bit of a tear. And I said, okay. Is everything okay? And he's like, yep. Yep. And I was like, okay. Do what you have to do. About 3 or 4 hours after that, I started having more and more pain. And I thought, this I didn't expect. Doesn't that get better? You know, doesn't, and why is it getting worse? I just kept telling my husband, something's wrong, something's wrong. I don't know if it's because we know what it's like to deal with difficult patients. I think both of us were like somewhat reluctant to be really pushy.
She felt disappointed that she wasn't able to advocate for herself more. And I heard so many stories like that, like mm-hmm. having a child and not being offered the full spectrum of healthcare that's available to help women recover from childbirth injuries. A lot of women think that they're like never going to have a healthy sex life again after they have babies because they never get like the medical attention that they need. And I feel very, very lucky to have a lot of information that a lot of people don't have.
Yeah. Are there any moments that you can think of in particular that gave you like the greatest education as to the difficulties of childbirth?
When Dr. Hilda Hutcherson, a pioneer of pelvic floor therapy in the United States, said that you should take a picture of yourself before childbirth as a reference for after childbirth. It's like, this is good information.
When you say take a picture of yourself, what do you mean specifically?
Oh, come on.
I'm not being obtuse.
Like, of your parts.
Oh, of the pieces.
Yeah.
And use it as a, wow, I mean, that is smart.
Yeah. What great information to have. Like, I love that I know about that. It's cool. My pregnant friends were calling me and asking me for advice. And I'm like, that makes me feel pretty awesome. And I felt like I could give them useful information. But more than anything, with the longest, shortest time, I just got to learn a lot about, like, relationships. I got to talk to parents from all over the country, and mm-hmm. people were so generous with sharing their stories. It just felt like an intimate space for me to share my story. A lot of people responded to that piece. They were like, I really related to this episode because ambivalence is something that I've struggled with. Mm-hmm. They felt judged, or they judged themselves for either not wanting to have kids or not being sure if they want to have kids, or mm-hmm. like being pregnant and still not sure if they want to have kids.
Yikes.
You know, I mean, the best response I got were people saying that listening to the episode made them feel less judged or less guilty about their own feelings of ambivalence. That felt really, really good.
And what was the hardest response?
The hardest response is that some people, I think, got the assumption that I was very naive. And, like, I don't really know how difficult it can actually be to have children, or that I was not being sensitive to people who might be having a difficult time trying to conceive. And the fact that that's what someone would take away from that, or that it would cause any sort of, like, offense or pain to someone who's struggling with something like that, was not something that I intended. Mm-hmm. Also, I like went on a date with a guy who, like, knew about it, and he was like, well, I already know how you feel about having kids. And I was like, okay.
How has the response been in your dating life? Like, I mean, I'm gonna be honest, like, the older that I get, and the more I want to be a little bit more choosy, a little bit more targeted about the people that I'm trying to date.
Yeah.
I try to let it be known, not like right away, like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm trying to get married to you and have your children, but just sort of like, I, you know, let it be known through conversation. Like, these are things that I'm interested in, because I kind of want to know if they freak out, then I'm like, great, peace. Like,
yeah, totally. Then, you know, it's just like, this is probably not
so,
but, a match.
But I can just tell people this. Like, they're like, if a dude meets you,
yeah,
he just Google you. You know what I mean? He can just Google you and be like, oh. He can listen to 30 minutes of your life. How has that affected your dating
life? That's so funny. Honestly, I haven't been in a situation to, like, really initiate that talk yet. I mean, there's nothing I'm embarrassed about with that episode, though. Like, it's just where I'm at, and I would share it with anyone who wanted to hear it.
So the show aired last year. You know, obviously there's been some time between then and now. How has the show airing changed your point of view? Do you still feel the same way now that you did then?
Yeah, it hasn't really changed how I feel about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of times where I get sort of, like, insecure about it, almost sort of, like, berating myself for verbalizing that, like, wish or that dream, and then I get over it. And, like, ultimately, I'm really happy with it, and I feel good about it. I was joking with a friend that, like, if I showed up here and I was pregnant, that would just be, like, perfect for the story arc.
I would have gifted you the largest fruit basket if you'd shown up here pregnant. Joanna Solitaroff, formerly a producer on The Longest, Shortest Time, is now producing a new podcast called Two Dope Queens. You should check it out. And The Longest, Shortest Time continues to release new episodes, so you should check those out as well. So at the top of today's show, I played clips for Iman from Flash Forward, On Being, and Star Talk Radio. And in the second half of the show, you heard clips from The Longest, Shortest Time. Stay tuned after the credits for a taste of what we are sampling next week. This episode was produced by Rose Reed, Sarah Abderrahman, and myself, with help from Kate Parkinson Morgan. It was edited by Annie Rose Strasser and Alex Bloomberg. Our theme music was made by Mike Avellian, and our ad music was made by Mark Phillips. Additional music in the show was by Jeffrey Brodsky. And the Longest Shortest Time music is made by the Batteries Duo. The show was mixed by Matthew Boll. Sampler is a production of Gimlet Media. Next week on Sampler, it's sweet, it's tart, it's refreshing, and it's Beyoncé. We'll look at how some of your favorite podcasts are sipping on lemonade.
You think they made this whole thing up?
I'm not rolling.
You think they made this whole thing up?
This is why. You ready for this?
Tell me.
Because I think if it was this deep, at the end of that documentary, it would be her packing her stuff.